K-Mud Podcast presents.
Be able to stay home, cousin. You will not be able to log in, zone out, and scroll past daily photos of genocide in Gaza. You will not be able to binge the next hit series on Netflix while bombs fall in Ukraine. You will not be able to DoorDash your fry bread with a side of Chipotle ranch dressing, because the revolution will not be live streamed. Revolution will not be brought to you by Meta AI. It will not be delivered in oversized Amazon Prime shipping boxes. The revolution will not star the ghost of Charlie Kirk. It will not feature Christy Noem on horseback selling white freedom with a Louis Vuitton handbag. The revolution will not come with an authentic turquoise necklace from Urban Outfitters. Because the revolution will not be live streamed. The revolution will not be a white manifesto authored by Stephen Miller and marketed by Pete Hegseth. The revolution will not come with a pair of Sydney Sweeney jeans. The revolution will not come with a native cheekbone filter. And the revolution will not erase your debt with a promo code. The revolution will not be mentioned in your gold-plated Trump Bible, because the revolution will not be live-streamed. There will be no highlight reels of police shooting down black brothers and sisters on body cam. There will be no drone footage of immigrant children running for their lives from Proud Boys dressed in ICE costumes. There will be no Fox News think tank pieces mansplaining why native genocide and black slavery isn't that bad. The revolution will not be on the Epstein list. The revolution will not be sponsored by Tesla with a photo of Elon giving a Nazi salute. The revolution will not come preloaded in your brand new Ray-Ban Meta glasses. The revolution will be live, brother. The revolution will be live, relatives. Our native people will be in the streets, cousin. Our black brothers and sisters will be in the streets. We'll all be in the streets demanding a better life. Our native seeds will be in the ground. Our kitchens will be alive with aunties cooking heirloom beans, grape dumplings, mole, jollof rice, tagusi soup, and pupusas. The revolution will smell like roasted blue corn and green chilies. The revolution will sound like the stampede of 10 million bison returning to their stolen land. Because the revolution will not be live streamed. The revolution will not be live streamed. The revolution will not be live streamed. The revolution will not be live. The indigenous revolution will not be live streamed. The black revolution will not be live streamed. The immigrant revolution will not be live streamed. The LGBTQ revolution will not be live streamed. The revolution will not be commodified and will not be sold at Target for a limited time only. The revolution will not have acai-flavored White Claws as official sponsored drink. The revolution will not be franchised by Disney. And the revolution will not buy a U.S. citizenship with a golden Trump card. The revolution will not be live streamed. Will not be live streamed. Because the revolution will be live, cousin. The revolution will be live, brother. is this revolution happening? Revolution is right fucking now!
Good morning and welcome to Heart of the Earth. This is a program about Native Americans and other indigenous cultures. My name is Agnes and I'll be with you for the next hour, although I probably have about a 2-hour show and I'm going to pack it into an hour. I hope you enjoy that opening piece. That was Sean Sherman, the Sioux cook. A couple of weeks ago I read from his book and he recorded this live in Minneapolis a few months ago and he finally shared it with everybody and I am so happy. And yes, it is you know, he really thanks Gil Scott-Heron for his song, The Revolution Will Not Be Televised. And yes, The Revolution Will Not Be Live Streamed. I have gone through my just, you know, knowing and not knowing what this crazy man is doing in Washington, and what he's doing to people of color, what he's doing to all the immigrants. I've gone through my tears. I've gone through my rage, and boy, I have rage. I have rage. And now I'm going to do Heart of the Earth. And I'm doing this because I'm proud of who I am. I'm proud of the color of my skin. I'm proud of the indigenous blood that runs through my veins. And I'm proud of everyone who stood under the clock in Garberville on Saturday, the people in Eureka. But I'm telling you, and the people all over this country, it's going to take more than wearing a friggin' frog suit. It's going to take a lot more than that. And we have to be ready. I want to share with you an excellent, excellent opinion piece by Levi Rickert of Native News Online. Because he asks, what would Dr. King say about ICE? And he says, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. is often reduced to a single quote. His one dream and safely fixed in history. But King was not a ceremonial figure. He was a disruptor. He challenged systems of power, condemned police violence, and warned that a nation could not survive while sacrificing human dignity for, quote, law and order. Which raises an unavoidable question as mass deportations, militarized raids, and terror in communities across America. What would King say about the tactics used on American streets by the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement? On this past Martin Luther King Day, we cannot speak for him, but we can listen to him. Quote, injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. Everywhere, King wrote from a Birmingham jail cell in 1963. He was responding to white clergy who urged patience, moderation, and obedience to the law. King rejected that moral evasion. In his From the Letters from Birmingham, written in April 16th of 1963 while he was jailed for participating in nonviolent protests, King directly condemned the use of police dogs against peaceful black demonstrators in Birmingham. King wrote that the white clergyman who had urged restraint and praised local police for, quote, keeping order, would not condemn the force so warmly if they had seen what really happened, namely dogs being unleashed on unarmed, nonviolent black men and women. In the letter, he wrote about, quote, hate-filled policemen curse, kick, brutalize, and even kill your black brothers and sisters with impunity. These words are hauntingly familiar now. One could easily write about ICE agents who are hate-filled and deputized by the Trump administration, men who curse, kick, brutalize, and even kill American citizens with impunity. In his essay, King makes a crucial distinction that still haunts America. There is a difference between what is legal and what is just. ICE operates legally. That does not settle the moral question. When armed agents raid neighborhoods, detain people without warrants, separate children from parents, and spread fear through entire communities, we are not witnessing simple law enforcement. We are witnessing state power used in ways that dehumanize, and that is precisely the kind of system King spent his life opposing. King understood something that remains uncomfortable today. The law can be an instrument of cruelty. Slavery was legal. Segregation was legal. The removal of Native nations from their homelands was legal. The incarceration of Japanese Americans was legal. Legality has never been a reliable measure of justice in the United States. From an indigenous perspective, this is not abstract. Native people know what it means to be policed, removed, confined, and managed by bureaucracies that claim to be, quote, just doing their job. We know what it means when the state decides certain populations are problems to be controlled rather than human beings to be protected. King also warned about the moral corrosion caused by normalized violence. In his opposition to the Vietnam War, he spoke of a nation that had become, quote, the greatest purveyor of violence in the world. He saw how militarism abroad was inseparable from repression at home. Today, immigration enforcement increasingly looks and feels like military operation. Tactical gear, armored vehicles, crowd control weapons, masked agents, raids that resemble counterinsurgency missions more than civil administration. If this is what, quote, law and order requires, King would have recognized it for what it is, a sign of a society losing its moral compass. None of this requires pretending that borders do not exist or that nations do not have the right to enforce laws. King was not naive about governance, but he was uncompromising about human dignity. Any system that relies on terror, humiliation, and collective punishment to function is, in his moral framework, already unjust. He would have also insisted we look at why people migrate. Violence, poverty, climate disasters, political instability. Many of these conditions are shaped by the very global economic and military systems the United States dominates. To then criminalize the displaced is not justice. It is double victimization. Late in his life, King turned his attention to what he called the, quote, giant triplets of racism, militarism, and materialism. Immigration enforcement today sits squarely at their intersection. It is racialized, it is militarized, and it is deeply entangled with an economic system that exploits labor while criminalizing the laborer. What would King call us to do? He would not counsel silence. He would not counsel patience. He would almost certainly support nonviolent resistance, moral confrontation, and civil disobedience against unjust policies. He would urge faith communities, civil society, and ordinary people to stand between the machinery of the state and those being crushed by it. Yes, I like my ice crushed. Above all, he would remind us that the true measure of a nation is not how efficiently it enforces its laws, but how faithfully it protects human dignity. A country can survive breaking families apart. It can survive ruling by fear. But King would tell us it cannot do so without losing its soul. And history suggests he would be right.
When we look at modern man, we have to face the fact that modern man suffers from a kind of poverty of the spirit, which stands in glaring contrast to its scientific and technological abundance. We've learned to fly the
and that was Seventh Generation Rise, and the song was The Sierra War Cry, great CD, The Fifth World. I'm going to share with you now from Julie Francella, just an excellent Native writer. And she says, "We were here before the border. There are moments when the United States tells the truth about itself without meaning to. One of those moments is watching U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement detain indigenous people, citizens, tribal members, people whose ancestors lived here long before today's laws, badges, and borders. This is not a clerical error. It is not a one-off. It is a predictable outcome of a country built on removal, surveillance, and the constant demand that Native people prove who we are in order to exist safely. Native nations predate the United States. We are not immigrants. We did not cross borders. Borders crossed us. Yet today, indigenous people, including those with U.S. and tribal citizenship, are being swept up in a sweeping federal immigration operation in the Minneapolis area. Tribal leaders say Native people have been stopped, questioned, and in some cases detained on the basis of skin color, names, or nothing more than federal agents deciding that they, quote, fit an immigration profile. Some tribal presidents have publicly demanded the release of their relatives held in ICE custody at facilities such as Fort Schelling, a site with a long and painful history of confinement for Dakota people. And if you don't know that, they are holding three Lakota men there. And this is the same place they held the Lakota men before they hung them. They hung the 38. And they won't let them go unless the Lakota people, the Lakota Nation, the Lakota Tribal Council, let's ICE come in to their reservation. But what those idiotic ICE people and all people setting these rules, they don't know their history. Those three Lakota men will sit and die there before they will allow them on their reservation. And it's because of the ancestors who sacrificed so much that those three men are not, they're not afraid to sacrifice for their people. They know what it means. The Cheyenne River Sioux tribe, oh, they passed a resolution. ICE cannot come. And they have set up blockades. They're blocking the roads. ICE cannot come onto the Sioux River Reservation. And I know how the Lakota can do a blockade because after COVID, when I went out there for ceremony, they had blockades and they stopped and they inspected to continue. This is what racial profiling backed by sovereign power looks like in the 21st century. The deepest truth is that this moment isn't just about detention numbers or legal jurisdiction. It is that ICE, a federal enforcement agency, has become a moving symbol of state violence in indigenous and immigrant communities. This is the same agency that on January 7th of 2026 fatally shot Renee Nicole Good, a 37-year-old U.S. citizen and mother of three, during a Minneapolis operation. Good was killed by an ICE officer in what authorities called an act of self-defense. Local advocates and witnesses fiercely dispute that characterization. And if you haven't heard the latest, you know, it was said that she still had a pulse for 8 minutes. And a group of doctors have come out in protest because they did not, there was a doctor there who said, "Let me get to her." And they would not let that doctor go to her while she was still breathing. To continue. In the days since, the federal presence has only grown. Thousands of agents are deployed. Stories of detentions, warrantless stops on U.S. citizens, and confrontations with residents have stirred protests and legal challenges. A judge in Minneapolis recently barred federal agents from retaliating against peaceful protesters observing immigration enforcement. That is what power looks like when it is unrestrained. Context matters. While serving as governor of South Dakota, Kristi Noem repeatedly made inflammatory claims about tribal nations, including unfounded allegations that Mexican cartels were operating on reservations and that tribal leaders were personally benefiting. Tribal nations condemned the remarks as harmful and racist, with many banning her from their lands. Yes, almost all of them did. 20% of her state, she was not allowed to visit while she was governor. to continue. When someone who openly clashed with tribal governments becomes the head of the department overseeing immigration enforcement and Native people are caught up in that enforcement, it does not land on neutral ground. One might say it falls under the category of retaliation. There is a pattern of delegitimizing tribes, portraying Native governance as suspect, and expanding enforcement power into Native lives. This is familiar territory for Indigenous people in the United States. There is another lie embedded in how this story is being told, and it is the word immigrant, and is the word migrant. Many of the people labeled migrants in ICE operations, especially those of Indigenous descent, are not outsiders to this continent at all. They are Indigenous peoples of the Americas, the Maya, Mixtec, Zapotec, Nahua, Purpeca, Quechua, Aymara, and countless others, whose civilizations existed for thousands of years before the United States, before Mexico, before Canada existed. They did not migrate to the Americas. They are from here. The U.S.-Mexican border did not divide European nations. It cut through homelands, trade routes, languages, kinship networks, and sacred paths that existed long before colonizers arrived. So when Indigenous people from south of the border are detained as illegal and Indigenous people from the north are detained as suspect, the state is not protecting borders. It is enforcing a settler fiction, one that insists Indigenous people must always be from somewhere else. Labeling Indigenous people migrants turns original peoples into trespassers. It erases history. It launders colonial violence into bureaucratic language. It turns removal into procedural issue rather than what it actually is, continued displacement under a different name. From the Arctic to the Andes, the tragedies of colonial enforcement are connected. Maps shift, communities remain, colonial violence persists. For generations, the federal government has demanded documentation from Native people while making documentation difficult or impossible to obtain. Births on reservation were often unrecorded. Families were displaced. Children were taken into boarding schools or foster care. Records were lost, destroyed, or never created. And today, when paperwork is missing, the same state treats that absence as suspicion. ICE detaining Native people isn't a new injustice. It's an old injustice, updated. In the continuation of past systems, Indian agents and removal policies now modernized with tactical gear, rapid deployment units, and news cycles. If the original peoples of this land can be detained because federal agents cannot or will not recognize tribal citizenship, then no one's rights are safe. If treaties can be ignored, if sovereignty can be treated as optional, then law is not law. It is power. And power, historically, has not treated Indigenous life as worthy of respect. Native people do not need to prove belonging to a country built on our dispossession. We are here. We were here before the border. We are still here. And no enforcement agency, no matter how many agents it deploys, has moral authority to detain Indigenous people on their own homelands. Not then, not now, not ever.
One side of the face tells us lies. One side of the face believes those lies. One side of the face believes nothing at all. We were all young together. One throw of the dice. No one left but survivors. One side of the face divided by two. One side of the face a darkening cloud. One side of the face won't stand up against the army of the rich. See us watching where they step, unseeing eyes, listening for promises. One side of the face praising love. One side of the face can't hear the praise. One side of the face lost its soul. Changing seasons, life gives us age. Who gives us insecurity through the seasons? How many children were unhappy? How many elders grow up lonely? One side of the face has a crooked smile. One side of the face prays for salvation. One side of the face prays with an E. Summers and autumns of our lives, imaginations trapped in technologic corrals, industrial hunting grounds, after youth, before age, entire lives spent never figuring what happens. One side of the face doesn't know any better. One side of the face is better than that. One side of the face hides from itself, and the other side of the face knows it.
John Trudell, One Side of the Face, from his, it was originally on a cassette tape called But This Isn't El Salvador, and it was originally released in 1987. Could have written it yesterday. I know, in these hard times, I think about John and what he would be saying and what he would be warning us about. But I want to share this with you because a native man said he was detained by ICE agents in Peoria, Arizona earlier this month despite providing documentation of his tribal citizenship and U.S. birth. Peter Yahtzee said he was working to send money back home to his family in Chinle, Arizona, which is on the it's in the northern part of the state. I spent a lot of time in Chinle on the Navajo Reservation. But he was sending his family the money when ICE agents, yes, he was in a gas station getting money orders, when ICE agents pulled into a parking lot, zip-tied his hands, and took him into custody on January 12th. Quote, I do iron work, welding, and millwright work. A lot of what I do make financially goes home to support my family back home. I have my kids. I have my baby, niece, my mother, my livestock, he said. Yahtzee said he was parked outside a convenience store at 4:30 a.m., about to start a day's work, when ICE agents flooded the parking lot. Quote, that's when they put me on the ground and they started shouting, immigration control. With his hands zip-tied, Yahtzee said he told agents where he could find his certificate of Indian blood, birth certificate, and other documents in his car. Quote, we've always been told if we're in that situation, announce who we are, provide your documents. I told them, I am Native. I'm a full-blooded Native American, Yahtzee explained. He said agents told him his IDs didn't match the car's registration. Yahtzee said he was driving his mother's vehicle. Before he knew it, Yahtzee said they were on their way to a holding cell. Quote, that 2 or 3 hours felt about like 6 or 8, he said. He said he was eventually released and his documents were returned, but the experience left him shaken. Quote, it was just really a lost feeling. And then behind that was a sickening feeling. Because of how I look, I'm going to be in that situation. It kind of makes you sick to your stomach. 1 week later, Yahtzee is sharing a story with the hope of helping others who end up in a similar position. Quote, keep your documents on you at all times and keep your cool, he warned. Navajo Nation leaders echoed that advice. They have set up a 24/7 hotline for Native Americans to call with questions about ICE or help if they are detained. Quote, make sure that you have your real ID. Make sure that you're calm with ICE officials. You'll get through this, maybe a couple of hours, but we'll get through this, said Thomas Cody, executive director for the Navajo Division for Children and Family Services on the Navajo Nation. Yahtzee said he appreciates the tribal's leadership response. Quote, it's amazing to see how our leaders are standing up to defend us, he said. Meanwhile, he's wondering what's next for his family, hoping his children won't have to endure what he did. People from our tribe never believed that we would ever experience something like that just because of who we are and where we come from. But the reality is that we're not exempt from it. This won't be the last time, he said. And of course, ICE did not respond. And now I'd like to share Peter Yahtzee in his own words.
And I was getting ready, putting on my work shirt, standing outside of my ride. And all these rides pulled in one after another, the Suburbans. They all get out and they start yelling at me to face my vehicle and put my hands on the top of the vehicle. So I'm all right, where I'm from, you learn that when it comes to the law, you do what you're told, otherwise things escalate. So I'm being compliant. About four or five rides down, they pull another guy out of his truck and they drag him on the ground, literally drag him on the ground. And then they toss me down, knees on the back, facing the pavement. That's when I heard him say immigration control. So I'm like, all right, hey, I'm full-blooded native. My wallet's in the car. I have my ID in there, my social security card. The backpack in the back seat has my CIB and my birth certificate. And thinking I'm good after all that. And they put me in one of the units. I'm in there for a couple of minutes. And then they start pulling off. So I was like, why are we leaving? You guys have my identification. And that's when they're like, well, that car, it came back under another name. It's not listed under the name that you gave us. Which leads us to believe you stole the vehicle and you stole your identity as well. And so I start telling them, hey, I have a job, I have bills, I have kids. And their response was, oh, we'll get them next. Oh, I got picked up by ICE because I look how I do. But I'm not going to lie, man. I'm not going to put on some kind of hard front. This is something that has me angry, stressed, and worried. I got to look over my shoulder all the time now. And what I went through is only a mild taste of what so many others are going through. And it's, at some point, as a human being, you have to come down to a realization that it ain't right. It dehumanizes you to be treated like that. It's like, no matter who you are, if you're waking up at 3, 4, 5 in the morning to build this country, you're treated like a stray dog. You don't belong here. You haven't earned your place here. And not only that, we don't need to earn a place here. This is where we're from. It's where I was born. My parents were born. My grandparents, great-great-grandparents, and all the way down the line. We've never been nowhere else. We've never known anything else. But we're told we don't belong here by people who aren't from here. And I've traveled this country. I've dealt with racism. But this is beyond racism. This is hating someone like they're a pest or a rodent. This is my house. You don't belong in here. And I was getting ready, putting on my work shirt.
Again, that was Peter Yahtzee, who was picked up by ICE near Phoenix when he was trying to get some money orders to send money back home. It's really hitting hard, and what happened a couple of days ago to a 10-year-old boy who's obviously from a different nation, his parents were not him, he sure looks it, and his mother had to film this because he was crying in the back seat after his soccer game. And he said, the goalkeeper told me I'm an illegal immigrant, even though I was born in America. And he said Trump was going to get me and send me back. It makes me really sad. This is children now doing it to other children. How would you like it if someone said that to your child? Another child. We have a bully president. He's a felon. married to an immigrant. And he's terrorizing this country. He's terrorizing immigrants. And what he says are felons. Yeah. Yeah. He wants to make America great again. But so far, ICE has been confirmed to. They shot a woman in the face and called her a effing bitch. Gassed a car full of children, almost killing an infant. They blinded a minor for life, a 16-year-old boy, blinded in one eye by them. They raped a woman for months in exchange for seeing her child. It's all over the news now. Yes, an ICE agent. You bring food and pictures of their kids. You want to see your child? Get in the closet. And they strangled a man in detention, in a detention center. They strangled him to death. So, 47, are we great now? Huh? Are we great? Well, ICE is terrorizing Native Americans. A Pascua-Yaqui tribal member grabbed near Totodom San Xavier District bordering Tucson reveals how federal agents are terrorizing U.S. citizens and migrants in detention in Oklahoma. Absentee Shawnee are now being harassed and detained by ICE agents. And, of course, in Minneapolis, the protests continue at Fort Schelling, where Native Americans illegally arrested have been taken. And outside the Whipple building, federal agents are firing tear gas and pepper balls at the protests continue. And I want to share with you now words from Chase Iron Eyes. He is with Lakota Law Project, and he is in Minneapolis, and he gave an interview on Native radio there. And so I want to play what he had to say.
You are listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot. Hey, we discuss local, national, Native news and events, and as you know, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues. Hey, we have our friend Chase Iron Eyes on. He has a distinguished career fighting for the civil rights of Natives, including serving as director of the Lakota People's Law Project, co-founding the Native news website, Last Real Indians, and as a Standing Rock activist and work within the Native Lives Matter movement. Chase, thank you so much for stopping in and checking in with our crew out here. It's great to see you.
It's my honor to be on, Robert.
Yeah, well, you're in the Twin Cities now. What have you seen, and what is your vibe about what's happening here in the Twin Cities?
We're in unprecedented territory. Those of us in the Native community and those of us who are conscious Americans, conscious patriots, those of us who are paying attention, we see the various iterations and the exercise of brutal corporate or state-sponsored violence. And my heart is with the people of Minneapolis-St. Paul. I was on the Pine Ridge Reservation and on the Standing Rock Reservation when our good sister lost her life. That's Renee Good. Lost her life to what many Americans and legal professionals feel is unlawful use of deadly force. And you've seen all the videos. I think there's enough out there that an objective and rational potential jury could, we can all form our own opinion. But from what I was able to review, there's not a doubt in my mind that a potential jury or a potential prosecutor in and around the state of Minnesota, the city of Minneapolis, could bring charges against the shooter. And what was extremely triggering for me after that illegal execution of Renee Good was the Red Lake woman, the woman from the Red Lake Nation who is driving with her 20-year-old nephew. I believe his name is Roberto Beto Rodriguez. I don't remember the name of the woman, but to see the terror in Native people's faces, to see that woman pleading with anybody who was listening for assistance, for humanitarian aid, for help. She was flabbergasted and couldn't understand why armed, masked, jackbooted personnel is attacking her nephew. She's doing her best to comply. She's doing everything that you can do in those situations. She's doing it in a way that is non-threatening, and it's not returning the aggression. But as we can see, ICE is not interested in rooting out criminals or rooting out the less desirables or any other labels that the administration has. You can see clearly now that they are interested in targeting, illegally profiling non-white people. We have a duty, Native people, all of the personnel that's over at powwow grounds right now, everybody from the Indigenous Protector Movement, all of the multitude of organizations and people, human beings, brothers and sisters who are showing up and asserting their right to dignity and peace. We're connecting with everybody else in Minneapolis, St. Paul, because it's clear that they're blurring the lines between what is law and order. We as human beings, as American citizens, as tribal nations, as tribal nationals, we deserve peace and dignity. We deserve to be able to send our kids to school without fear that they're going to be abducted. We all deserve that right to peace, but it's becoming more and more clear that we're going to have to stand up. And it's against seemingly insurmountable odds. There's multiple instances of tribal members being apprehended, tribal members being snatched from the streets for advocating for a safe interaction. What happens when ICE is breaking the law? What happens if ICE shows up at your home? We need unity. There are forces that are trying to exploit our fears, our insecurities, our prejudices. It's a spiritual battle. It's spiritual warfare. And so part of what is happening with the brilliant and diabolical deployment of violence, subjecting women and children and families to corporate-sponsored state violence, and also attacking psychologically. We can see that Indigenous nations and the spiritual dignity that we live with, that is extremely important to saving the United States of America. They killed a woman. They killed an innocent woman in broad daylight so that they could send a message. Imagine how terrifying that is for a family with children inside. That is a dangerous situation. Again, they're going to try to goad us into violence, returning the same aggression and violence that's being instigated against us. I truly feel and I believe that they're trying to create civil disorder. And if ICE is here, they're going to try to stay here until they create civil disorder. It takes all of the grace, all of the patience, all of your spiritual constitution not to lash out. When those who are charged with enforcing the law are acting outside the scope of that law, that's when conscious Americans have to avail themselves of all knowledge of their rights, because it's not normal. We're not playing in the same field that we expect to be playing in. Hey, the free world could be relying on you.
Right.
Minneapolis, St. Paul, Minnesota, they are relying on you to show up. And we are showing up. But at the same time, Governor Waltz, our political leadership needs to take full assessment of the severity and the gravity of the situation that they're in and use all measures. Minneapolis will back you up. Minnesota will back you up. ICE is bad for business. We need to continue to humanize each other and rely on each other. Now, if you read books about the Holocaust and books about fascism in Nazi Germany, the attitudes are the same. The level of force, never again. Mm-hmm. We will never let something like that again happen. We deserve to send our kids to school and expect that they're going to come back without having to face armed agents of terror and be traumatized for life.
So I just want to say you've been in this fight for a long time, and thank you so much for being on.
And that was Chase Iron Eyes of Lakota Law Project speaking at Native Roots Radio in Minneapolis. I have one more story I must share with you, because the wave of federal immigration agents swarming the Minneapolis area might be unprecedented in law enforcement history, but the response in the indigenous community is not. A half a century ago, the American Indian Movement was founded on Franklin Avenue, the heart of the urban Indian diaspora in South Minneapolis, to counter overzealous municipal policing. Today, AIM patrols are back, watching over elders, youth, and aunties along the same avenue in what is now known as the city's American Indian Cultural Corridor. Quote, "History shows us time and time again, it doesn't repeat, but it rhymes," said Heather Bruegel, an activist, historian, and Oneida Tribe of Wisconsin citizen who has studied the American Indian Movement. Quote, "So you can look throughout history and see different examples of what we see today happening in the past. And if history rhymes, some of the names do even more. Some are the same. Crow Belcourt, Bad River Band of Chippewa, has been out on the recent patrols. His father, the late Clyde Belcourt, was among the founding members of AIM in 1968. "I grew up in the movement," said Belcourt, executive director of the Indigenous Protector Movement, a group with AIM roots. Quote, "I always like to say I'm second generation American Indian Movement. It's like full circle for me." The confrontations between law enforcement and protesters in Minneapolis, including the shooting of 37-year-old Renee Good, have brought reports that indigenous people have also been swept into custody. A cohort of indigenous patrollers now reached close to 100, Belcourt said. Quote, "We're running from 7 in the morning to 7 in the evening, and even more. We still have some patrollers going out until like 11 or 12 at night. And just like in 1968, the patrollers are on the street to help community members feel safe." Quote, "It's really scary here," said Mary Lagarde, executive director of the Minneapolis American Indian Center, which operates from its base on Franklin Avenue. "Federal immigration and custom enforcement officers have surged into the Twin Cities area to counter what the Trump administration has called corruption and criminality in area immigration populations. At this point, there are more federal enforcement officers in Minneapolis than metropolitan police. The dramatic presence has prompted widespread protests and rebukes from state and local officials. There have been at least 2 shootings involving the federal officers." Quote, "We woke up and we all had these ICE agents everywhere," said Belcourt. "They're all over our neighborhood. I'm scared for our old people and the young ones who just wanted to catch the city bus to go to the grocery store. I worry about them getting picked up from ICE." Lagarde, White Earth Band of Chippewa, knows the feeling. Quote, "It's like you don't want to leave the house," Legrand told Indian Country Today. "That's how most of our people are feeling right now. Our elders are scared. Our young people, too. This is really impacting our kids." Lagarde said the patrols by AIM members and other groups such as Many Shields War Society are needed. Quote, it's really important that we're out protecting," she said. "The number of volunteers out patrolling are growing." Quote, "We have relatives coming in from South Dakota, Wisconsin, and neighboring states," Belcourt said. "Some have come from as far away as Oklahoma." And just like in the old days, AIM members are gathering along Franklin Avenue, just as they gathered for occupations of Alcatraz Island in San Francisco in 69, the Bureau of Indian Affairs headquarters in 1972, and the Wounded Knee Massacre site in 1973. AIM members also turned out in force in Minneapolis in 2020 after the death of George Floyd at the hands of law enforcement. What's the difference from the early years? Modern communication tools. Quote, we didn't have these cell phones and all this social media back in them days, Belcourt said. Quote, everybody called on house phones and it was amazing how many people would show up. My dad called it the moccasin telegraph and people would just call one and whenever they needed people to be, everyone would show up. They came to help the people then and today. And one of the first acts that AIM did when they were forming was patrolling the streets and making sure that if their community members were stopped or pulled over by the police, that their rights were being followed. Like, you know, hey, you have the right to this. You have the right to that, a bugle said. And we see now that happening because people's rights are being violated. We see indigenous folks, tribal members being detained. It's important that groups like AIM and other groups are coming out again, working in community and making sure that we're protecting each other. And I just have a few seconds before I put on my song. I'm going to play the American Indian Movement song. And I will stand here with my fist in the air, proudly, as I've stood on the stages of Ecuador and around the world to that song. This is absolutely crazy what's going on. And we have to remember who we are as human beings. Love one another. If you disagree with somebody, step aside. Because love is so much more powerful than hate. I'll be back next week.
Yeah. has been a K-Mud podcast. To listen to other shows and more episodes of this show, find us on all the platforms where you get your podcast and also on our website, kmud.org.